Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The Dominican Republic is a baseball powerhouse, and the small sugar town of San Pedro de Macorís may be the center of it all, yielding big talents from Alfredo Griffin to Sammy Sosa to Robinson Cano. How did it come to be this way? Best-selling author Mark Kurlansky is with us to unspool the story. This hour On Point, San Pedro, the Dominican Republic, and two countries' love for baseball. You can join the conversation when you watch a player step up to the plate. Do you ever wonder about his journey there? Where he comes from? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me in the studio this hour is Mark Kurlansky. He's author of many best-selling books, including Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world, and Salt, a world history. His new book is The Eastern Stars, How Baseball Changed the Dominican Town of San Pedro de Macorís. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Mark Kurlansky, welcome back to On Point. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Jane.
So the roster of players from San Pedro is a who's who of baseball. What, 79 major players in all?
Yeah.
Run down a few of the more memorable names from this great town, San Pedro de Macorís.
Rico Carty, George Bell, Pepe Frias, Alfredo Griffin, Joaquin Andujar, current players, Fernando Tatis and Robinson Cano,
and on the list goes. Right? So why did San Pedro become a baseball powerhouse, this epic wellspring of talent? Why not some other little town?
Well, it started with sugar. There was a boom in sugar in the Dominican Republic and Cuba from about 1880 through the 1920s that is called, used to be called the Dance of the Millions, as in millions of dollars. And in the Dominican Republic, the center of it was San Pedro. It's an area that's flat and has fertile soil, and San Pedro has a good port. Mm-hmm. And eight sugar mills became established in San Pedro. And these sugar mills were run by either Americans or Cubans. Mm-hmm. And in the 1880s, 1890s, Americans and Cubans were completely obsessed with baseball. Mm-hmm. And a sugar mill, at best, operates about half of the year. Mm-hmm. And they brought in workers from the Eastern Caribbean, what was then the British West Indies. And they were cricket players. So here were these baseball-crazed executives looking at their idle workforce out in the field swinging cricket bats. And they thought, let's teach these guys how to play baseball. Mm. So all the mills formed baseball teams to play in the off-season, and they played each other. It became a league, and they played a very high quality of baseball. And it was at a time when baseball was changing a lot. The number of balls, number of strikes, rules were changing and being established all the time. My favorite of which is that there was a ruling that you were no longer allowed to catch a fly ball with your hat.
You know, I could just imagine as you're speaking that these kids out in the fields, you know, cane stalks for bats and rocks for balls. I mean, that's what it came down to, right?
Absolutely. And socks. And you still see kids in San Pedro using, they take socks and they wad them up into a ball and they sew it together and then they soak them to give a little density to it. And they'll bat this thing around. It actually works surprisingly well for a while after you can only hit a wad of socks so many times and it starts becoming a little oblong.
You say that there were three things that opened the major leagues to San Pedro in the mid-20th century, right?
Yeah.
What were they?
Well, to start with, it was the dropping of the color line, and starting with Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby in 1947. Dominican Republic is 85% of color, either black or mulatto. Mm-hmm. And so there were virtually no players who were qualified for the major leagues, so that for, you know, from the 1880s until the 1950s, they were playing great baseball but had no access to the major league. They played with Negro Leaguers and Puerto Ricans, Cubans, but major league was out. So that was the first thing that opened it up. And then in 1963, Kennedy imposed an embargo on Cuba. And at that time, I mean, Cuba was the traditional baseball partner of the United States, the second oldest baseball tradition. And at that time, there had been 90 Cuban major leaguers and 12 Dominicans. But Cubans were no longer available. And so...
So they had to go elsewhere for talent.
They had to go elsewhere, and many of the scouts were Cuban. The Dodgers had a very good scout who was a Cuban. And these Cubans, they knew about the, you know, Cubans and Dominicans used to play together. And so they started going to the Dominican, and you know, they started looking in who played in the Pan Am game teams, and then they started looking in the military because when in the 30 years that Trujillo was dictator, he built up the baseball teams for the Army and the Navy and the military teams, which is how they found Juan Marichal, the only Dominican Hall of Famer. But it didn't take very long till they discovered this funny little sugar town that had all these great players out in the cane fields.
The third thing that opened the major leagues to San Pedro was the inception of the draft and free agency
In baseball. Yeah, which came about the Curt Flood case. Curt Flood refused to be traded. It went to the Supreme Court, and eventually there was this system where players were drafted but then later could become free agents, and the draft was still is very constricted. You can each team is only allowed a certain number of draft picks in reverse order of their standings the previous season. So last, you know, the bottom team gets the first picks, and there's all these rules. But you can do anything with free agents. You can sign as many as you can afford, and anybody can sign them. And foreigners are free agents, except for Puerto Ricans and Canadians. And so there became this thirst for foreigners.
Huge opportunity.
And yeah, and this was at the time of the expansion when baseball went from 16 teams to 30 teams. And so there was this hunt for foreigners, and the Dominican, with Cuba not available, was, you know, the place to look.
Place to go. Will you describe for us what baseball means in San Pedro? I mean, for those of us who are in the United States, I mean, give us a sense of the importance of baseball in San Pedro de Macorís.
Yeah, most people in San Pedro struggle to get enough food for their family. They earn a few hundred dollars a year, struggle for housing. If somebody in the family gets sick, they can't afford a doctor. They can't buy medicine. The average salary in the major league is $3 million a year. So, you know, you'd be working on your swing too, and you know, it's salvation for the entire family is what baseball is.
You write about how baseball is a team sport, but in the Dominican Republic, it's very much an individual sport, because in baseball in San Pedro, everybody has a chance to be a star at bat.
Exactly. I mean, the reason why writers like me, who, you know, I'm not a sports writer, write about baseball is because baseball is always such a great metaphor for other things. And one of the things that's really meaningful to Caribbeans is that in baseball, everybody gets their chance at bat, except, of course, American League pitchers. But and in a broader sense, it's, you know, everybody in San Pedro, you know, has a chance that somebody in their family will be a major league millionaire. It's a huge thing for this poor place with very, very few opportunities.
And so how young are kids starting? How young are they preparing to
get there? Oh, you see three-year-olds working on their swings, and it's amazing how well a three-year-old can swing a bat if they practice. There is a law that you can't sign them till they're 16 and a half. Before they had that law, you know, people were looking for their 14-year-old sons. What's happened? My son's disappeared. It turns out some scout has them questered away somewhere because they don't want the other teams to know they're developing
them. Literally locked
away. Yeah. So now it's 16.5, and they start looking at them in a serious way at about 14 or 15.
Most prized attributes in San Pedro, you say, quote, he was born to bat.
Yeah.
They look for him really early.
Well, you know, the natural athlete, the natural swing, the scouts talk about the five-tool player that, you know, baseball requires more diverse skills than any other sport. And
does San Pedro have a reputation for producing players with specific skills based on that? I mean, are they hitters? Are they fielders? Are they pitchers?
Well, they're kind of known for their shortstops, but, you know, I sort of analyzed the players, and shortstops have not been at all dominant. There was a period fairly early on in the 1970s where they produced a phenomenal number of really good shortstops, people like Alfredo Griffin and Julio Franco and Tony Fernandez. But they produced, you know, the great hitters like Rico Cardi and George Bell and good outfielders and good pitchers. They've actually produced more pitchers than anything, but for some reason they're not known as a town of pitchers. Everybody says, oh, that town with all the shortstops.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour with author Mark Kurlansky about the Dominican Republic, baseball, and his new book, The Eastern Stars. I want to listen at the top here to an interview with MouthpieceSports.com. Alfonso Soriano is describing playing baseball growing up in San Pedro. The interviewer asked him whether it was similar to playing baseball in the United States.
No. It's totally different, you know, because we play like a little field. We have a, what I say, my brother have a catcher glove because my uncle gave it to him because my uncle used to be a catcher too. So, and he played in the United States. So when my brother start running, I take the glove and I play catch with somebody else.
Here's a listener who concurs with Alfonso. He says he lived in San Pedro de Macorís for about 6 months. He says one of my favorite memories of the place was seeing little kids playing baseball with whatever tools they could find. They used a dirty doll head for the ball, a stick for the bat, and cardboard pieces for the mitts. Posted by Tyler. Thanks very much, Tyler. Back with Mark Kurlansky. What do you remember? I mean, is there an image of baseball in San Pedro that sticks in your mind?
Image of a baseball? Well, because the definitive, uniquely San Pedro baseball is a wad of socks, you know. And there are, because San Pedro has gotten more and more attention from the major league, there's more and more baseballs there. But originally they were playing with socks, and you still see kids playing with socks.
Well, the Dominican Republic in San Pedro is getting a lot of attention from the major leagues. It's crawling with major league scouts, and they're looking at every kid, aren't they? I mean, the prospect of being spoken to by a scout or even being given pointers at the plate in your book is cause for celebration, I read.
Oh, yeah, and they're, you know, after I'm spending a while there, I started to get to know the scouts, and I realized that they're absolutely everywhere. Mm-hmm. And baseball is absolutely everywhere, and you can wander around San Pedro and, you know, see 5 and 6 games going on in a day. And the scouts, that's what they do. They go from one field to another, and they have certain kids that they're looking at that catch their attention for some reason.
Well, what is the reason, Mark? I mean, well, that was such an interesting piece of your book.
It's a very difficult thing to look at an undernourished 15-year-old and see what kind of baseball player he's going to be. The first thing you have to do is figure out what his body is going to be after he gets good food and good training.
Which is why some of these scouts are taking these kids and feeding them 5 times a day.
Absolutely. And I've eaten with them, and they really pack it in.
Yeah.
But they work it all off. They work them so hard. And I was watching a game with a scout named Eddie Toledo, old-time scout for the Mets who now scouts for Tampa Bay. And we were watching this young pitcher, this really skinny guy, and he turned to me and he said, "Look at that kid. He can tie his shoes without bending his knees." And I thought, wow, I'd never thought about that. But, you know, he was saying that he had these great long arms. They look for all sorts of things that you wouldn't think of there.
Not just physical attributes, too. In your book, you say that the scouts are looking for kids who love the game and who have the right attitude, which is harder and harder to find.
Yeah, they all talk about how this is getting harder and harder to find. Players like Jose Reyes, who just seem to exude this love of the game. It has become so much about money. A lot of scouts feel that it's become too much about money, and something happens when it's all about, you know, what is my signing bonus going to be, and you lose this thing about just loving baseball. It is supposed to be a game.
Well, take us on a journey from the fields of San Pedro de Macorís, where so many of the great Major League Baseball players in this country started. Take us on a journey from those fields into the Major League team scouts, elaborate and sophisticated baseball academies in San Pedro, these private guarded complexes where they train them and ultimately take them.
Right. Well, nowadays, this didn't used to be true in earlier times, but nowadays players usually find themselves some sort of a good program, or their parents find them some sort of good program by the time they're 12 or 13. And they get developed so that when they're ready, a tryout is arranged with the major league. By law, that can't take place till they're at least 16 and a half, and hopefully not much later, because after 16 and a half, the older they get, the less money they're worth, because it takes 4 or 5 years to get into the major. If you get in at all, there's only 3% of kids who are signed to ever make it to the major league.
Which is why there are a lot of kids you don't really know their age, because there's a lot of lying about your age going on.
Yes, and people in America hear that and they imagine that, you know, underage kids being exploited, and there is some of that, but often it's the reverse. It's some 19-year-old pretending to be 16 years old so that he can get a better bonus. And bonuses have been going up and up. It used to be that a couple $1,000s was a good bonus, and now it's not unusual to have a few $100,000. In 2008, Oakland signed a pitcher for $4.5 million, not even a left-handed pitcher. And that, you know, that guy and his family are set for life no matter what happens. I don't know if Oakland will be set. But
so a scout finds this kid, takes him into a camp.
After they sign them, they go to a training academy where they just have practice games all the time. They learn more about the game. They develop skills, and they learn some English. The first phrase of English they always learn is "I've got it," which is a good thing to know if you're playing outfield. They learn things about what it's going to be like in America. And this is also the first cut. They look at them, and some of them just get released there and never get to the U.S. If they get past the training academies and the summer Dominican League, where the kids from the different academies play each other, then they go on to the U.S. and they play rookie ball. And
let's get back to the basic training camp, because I have a scene from a film you know well, the 2008 film Sugar, where Dominican players learn English as part of their instruction in these baseball training camps.
I got it.
Fly ball.
Fly ball.
Line drive.
Line drive.
Ground ball.
Ground ball.
Ground ball.
Ground ball.
Home run.
Home run.
Home run.
Home run.
There are a lot of transitions that are necessary for these kids coming to the United States after baseball training camp.
Absolutely. You have to keep in mind that it's not only that they haven't been to the U.S. before. A lot of them have never been out of San Pedro before.
Right.
These are, you know, small-town kids. And they go to this world that is completely different. The food is different. They don't know what to eat, and they don't know how to order things. And there's lots of stories about, you know, Pedro Gonzalez, who was the one of the early players, learned how to say ham and eggs and spent a couple of years eating nothing but ham and eggs. And Jose Cano, Robinson Cano's father, was a pitcher, and he loved Whoppers, but he could never remember if they were in McDonald's or Burger King, and he was always going into the wrong one and getting into trouble. And Julio Franco was sent to a farm team in Montana, and he didn't have a coat. He had never worn a coat, and there's snow in the mountains. And a lot of problems with race, because there's a lot of racism in the Dominican Republic, but right. It's a very different kind of racism than American racism.
Which is difficult to understand for these players, as you write about.
Very, very difficult. The Dominican racism is strongly based on this fear of Haiti, which occupied Dominican Republic twice. And if you look Haitian, you will get you'll be the recipient of bigotry. There was one of the more talented politicians, a man named Peña Gomez, who never made it to president and always said that he looked too Haitian. And once when he came close, Balaguer, who's the incumbent, circulated the rumor that he was Haitian and he had a plot for Haiti to take over the Dominican Republic, and the guy lost. So that's what, you know, Dominican Haitian is like. And so these guys who don't look Haitian go to the United States, and they don't think that racism and Jim Crow in the South in the 60s, they don't think this stuff has anything to do with them. Mm. And they find out the hard way otherwise.
We have a mountain of calls lined up here, Mark. Let's get to one in Buffalo, New York. Robert is on the line. Thanks for waiting, Robert. Welcome to On Point.
Yes. Hello. Yeah, I have several comments. I think one reason Caribbean players do so well is they're able to play year-round. Up here, we can only play a couple months a year. I think that makes a big difference. Frank DeFord, who you may know of, he's a commentator on Wednesdays and All Things Considered, said it's no surprise that Canadians have the best hockey players, etc., etc.
It's true. The climate is ready-made.
It's true, but on the other hand, Canadians have good hockey players because they have a strong tradition of hockey. And another one of the things that makes Dominicans good is they have, and particularly San Pedro, is that they have this very old, long-standing, strong tradition of playing baseball. Hmm. But you're right, they do play it all year round.
In Carlisle, Massachusetts, Mary is on the line. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. My objection to this whole thing is that these kids in the Dominican Republic are being taken out of school at age 16 and a half, and the future of the whole population of the world is a good education. I think professional sports are doing a big disservice. They should require all students to finish a minimum of high school, and I do believe that some sports used to require a college education.
You know, you talk about that's the downside. Mary, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, that's the downside to all this. Lot of Dominican parents would agree with you, and, you know, especially since only 3% make it to the majors, and they're throwing out any other career. Felipe Alou, one of the first Dominican Major League stars, wanted to be a doctor, and he was offered a couple $100 from the Dodgers, and he gave up his medical career. And a lot of these people, I mean, their parents, they like parents everywhere, they dream of their kids being doctors and lawyers. And Julio Franco's mother didn't want him to drop out of school and go off to play baseball. That one worked out fairly well. But
it often doesn't.
It often doesn't, and it is a big problem. There's an interesting thing with the Tampa Bay Rays, who are not to be spoken of well in Boston this week.
Exactly. Right. Four in a row, I think, right?
The Rays are not a big money team, and they can't compete with other teams in bidding for some of these hot players. But what they offer is they say that anybody signs with the Rays, if they get released, will pay for your education through college. Mm-hmm. And this is a very appealing thing because it means if baseball doesn't work out, you still have a future.
Mark Kurlansky, what's the dividing line between those who make it and those who don't? Because you write about and talk about friends in the Dominican Republic who are good enough to be signed to the major leagues, but they never make it. And they have a pretty rough life after that. The stakes are so high.
Yeah, and one of the things that's so difficult about getting released is that they don't tell you why. You just get called into this office and they say you're released. And if you're in the U.S., they give you a ticket back to the Dominican, and you no longer have a legal right to be in the U.S. because they bring in baseball players as migrant workers, like farm workers. The harvest is over. Goodbye. And
so the cutting of a player, it's brutal.
It is brutal. Jose Cano was called in. He later went back and actually did make it to the majors, but at one point he was released, and his team was going off to play an away game. And he left the office after just being told he was released, and he had to get on the bus and tell his teammates that he wasn't going. He'd been released and had to go back to the Dominican. And it's just heartbreaking. And, you know, you come home a failure. You've let your family down. They were hoping that you were going to save them. And but the town is full of, you know, most of them don't make it into the majors. And your opportunities are calibrated on how far you did get. For instance, in playing in the Dominican Professional League, you get paid according to, you know, if you were in AAA, you get more money than somebody who was released in AA. If you played one day in the major leagues, you're a major leaguer, and that's a whole other status. And these things also mean something in terms of jobs in baseball, because there's a lot of jobs in baseball in San Pedro now at the academies and in different programs.
Well, speaking of the salaries and the bonuses, I mean, you speak initially of six-figure signing bonuses, which are not unusual, but you say there's actually some concern now about giving kids that big money, because once they have so much of it and send it back, they're not trying as much anymore to play.
Well, yeah. I mean, this kid who got $4.5 million for a signing bonus does not have the same urgency to make it as a kid who got $2,000 because, you know, he is one of the wealthier people in the Dominican Republic, regardless of what else happens to him. Baseball is that's one of the reasons why the minor league pays so badly, is that baseball, you know, is based on this premise of promotion and your salary is supposed to go up as you advance. And
how many young people are signed every year in San Pedro?
Well, I can tell you that in the Dominican Republic, over $40 million a year is spent on signing bonuses. So it's become a huge business. And there's a lot of people working to get percentages of these bonuses by developing players. That's become a huge business also. It's a lot of money. That's only the $41-42 million in signing bonuses is only a fraction of the amount of money that Major League Baseball is putting into the Dominican economy. It's become one of the biggest things in the Dominican economy.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour with author Mike Kurlansky about the Dominican Republic, baseball, and his new book, The Eastern Stars. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Robinson Cano, the Yankees' star second baseman, still goes home to the Dominican Republic in the offseason. This is an interview in 2008 with sports talk radio hosts Mike and Mad Dog on New York's WFAN, where Cano says that he played 10 games at home before he was told to stop by Major League Baseball management.
I think they told you to knock it off, right? They didn't want you playing anymore.
Yeah, they told me to knock it off. Yeah.
But you guys loved it. You could play every day of the year. You love baseball so much. You could play every single day if you had to, right?
I grew up in a baseball field with my dad, so that's why I love baseball. And I would like to play the whole year.
Mark Hrlansky, what's the story?
Well, like a lot of Dominican players, he plays for the Dominican Professional League in the wintertime. His team is actually the title of my book, The Eastern Stars, Las Estrellas Orientales, which is probably the most poetic name I've ever heard for a baseball team. And the Eastern Stars is this team, you know, it reminds me, because I'm a longstanding Red Sox fan, and it reminds me of the old Red Sox, you know. They start out great, and in the face of impossible odds, they find a way to lose in the end. And I remember particularly the year that Robinson was talking about in that interview. I had called Alfredo Griffin, who is the manager of the Eastern Stars now, and I was going down there, and I said, you know, I've sort of lost touch, and how are you doing? And he said, very excited, we're in first place. And I by the time I got there, they had lost four in a row, and they lost about 10 in a row, and then they were eliminated. And one of the things was that a lot of the star players, like Robinson Cano, are limited in how many games they can play, because in the old days, like Rico Carty, in the height of his career, was playing for the Eastern Stars, and he got injured and was out for a year. And they don't like their multi-million-dollar properties getting hurt down in the Dominican Republic.
In field games, yeah. Let's go back to the phones, Mark Hrlansky. Here's Mark in Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Hi. I'm curious about the fact that there's academies in America which send mostly white kids to play baseball, and they go on to the majors. And it's interesting to hear there's academies in the Dominican Republic. But the result has been there's no black American players anymore. Black children are directed towards football and basketball. And I'm curious if your author there wants to comment on that, and I'll take the answer off the phone.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a result. It's, you know, people make this illogical leap. It is true that the number of African-American players has steadily declined in the same years that the number of Dominican players has increased. But it's not that somebody has made a decision, we're not going to use African-American players, we're going to bring in Dominican players. It's that there are 30 teams at slots for 750 top baseball players. They're desperately looking for outstanding talent, and they're having a great deal of trouble recruiting African Americans in the inner cities. I've spoken with numerous people involved in programs in inner cities. A lot of these programs have closed down because of a lack of interest, possibly because you can get the big money professional contract a lot quicker in basketball and football than you can in baseball. But for whatever reason, that's what's happening. And the, you know, the fewer American talents that are developed, the more foreign talents are going to be brought in. Hmm.
Mark Hrlansky, how has the steroid scandal in Major League Baseball resonated in the Dominican Republic? I mean, New York Yankees star Alex Rodriguez, for one, famously admitting that he injected steroids that he received from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, well, the problem there is that the Dominican Republic doesn't regulate any drugs, really. So, I mean, you can go to just about any pharmacy and get steroids, and, you know, some of them are animal grade steroids. They're used in agriculture.
Right.
I don't know what the medical results of taking animal grade steroids are, but so they're there, and these kids are under tremendous pressure, and you know, so it's an obvious thing. However, the Major League Baseball has started testing Dominican kids on signing. And, you know, MLB claims, and, you know, they're the only ones doing the testing, and they say that, you know, the incidence of steroid use has steadily gone down, and it's now at about 3% So testing may, you know, solve that problem. It also may solve it, you know, for the major league.
The numbers are maybe lower than they used to be, but they're still high. And Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig recently assigned an emissary to the Dominican Republic to look at how this talent pipeline could be revamped with this steroid use and the issues associated with it.
Yeah, I don't think that steroids is the main concern there because, as I say, they've had some success in regulating steroids, but there's a lot of other abuses. The big thing is what are called buscones. Buscón from the Spanish verb buscar, to look for. And these are people who earn their living by developing players for a percentage of the signing bonus because signing bonuses have become that profitable. Mm-hmm. And this is pretty much an unregulated business as to what percentage you take and what terms and what your business relationship is with this kid and his family. And usually the kid and the family like the Buscones, and they regard them as friends, and there's a lot of abuse there. And so there's, you know, a strong feeling among Major League Baseball that this should be regulated. And among other scandals, there's been a lot of scandals, and this is, you know, Major League Baseball doesn't like scandals. And so they want to go down there and regulate all this stuff, put a stop to this where they need to put a stop to it and show it as untrue where it is untrue and just sort of heal the reputation of Dominican baseball.
Here's another call from Plattsburgh, New York. Raymond is on the line. Hi, Raymond. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you. There's a major problem here, and that is that they're really is no education system in the Dominican Republic for most of these children. Private schools exist, but they cost money, and the population is just too poor to afford that.
That is the issue that we talked about earlier,
yeah,
right, Mark?
Yeah.
Thank you, Raymond.
There is, I mean, actually, if you look at the education by American standards, it's very cheap, but you're right that many Dominicans can't afford it. There's a university in San Pedro and the best medical school in the country if you get the money for it. But a lot of these kids were, most of them, were going to school until they signed with Major League mm-hmm. Baseball. Mm-hmm.
You knew the Dominican Republic so well before you started this book, Mark, but you spent 2 years researching it. Can you describe that process?
Well, for starters, I just went to San Pedro and hung out in ball fields and met people. And, you know, there's just so many ball fields. And you go to a ball field in San Pedro and you never know who's going to show up. There's some ex-major leaguers, some current major leaguers, all sorts of people with interesting stories who got...
What are the major leaguers doing there?
Well, they live there. You know, they're from San Pedro.
They're going back.
And
yeah.
Some of them are, you know, current players that are, you know, there for the winter time. Some of them play for the Eastern Stars. Mm. Some of them are old-time players. You know, Alfredo Griffin goes back every year. George Bell is in the next town over in La Romana. He's around and...
So you see all this.
Yeah, Joaquin Andujar I used to run into all the time and with his SUV with his number on it. And it was very funny. These guys, they all have SUVs, and they have those tinted windows so you can't look in and see who it is. But then they put something on the outside of the car so that everybody knows who it is. They put their number there or something.
With the global reach of Major League Baseball, do you think Latin Americans' relevance as a talent pipeline has peaked? Do you think it perhaps might diminish or no?
Well, there's actually several levels to this. Is San Pedro going to stay dominant in Dominican baseball? Is Dominican going to stay dominant in Latin America? And is Latin America going to stay dominant in the world? There is so much talent in Latin America that I think, although there's a lot of Asian talent and although Major League Baseball has an organization, Major League Baseball International, that's going all over the world. I mean, they're even in England, though they haven't come up with any prospects there. It's going to be a long time before there's any region that produces as much as Latin America. And, you know, the embargo is going to be dropped in Cuba one of these days, and there's going to be a huge number of prospects. The 60 defectors that have come to the major leagues since 1963 are not even necessarily the best of the players in Cuba. I mean, there's just a wealth of talent there. And Nicaragua is emerging. And so it's going to be more competitive for the Dominican Republic. And in the Dominican Republic, other towns have started noticing what San Pedro did. And now there's a lot of players coming out of the Southwest, which is the poorest part of the Dominican, even poorer than San Pedro. So it's all getting more and more competitive. But there are a lot of Dominicans in the pipeline right now and a lot of people from San Pedro. So in the short term, you're going to be seeing a lot more San Pedro players.
To Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Paul is on the line. Hi, Paul. Welcome to On Point. Thanks for waiting.
Well, thank you very much. And how are you doing today?
Well, fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, my question is this. I've heard several people call in and talk about what a disservice is being done to the children in the Dominican Republic because education is being suppressed in the interest of baseball. Let's say you had the town of San Pedro. Let's say that no kids played baseball. They all pursued education to its maximum. I mean, what would be the opportunities in the Dominican Republic, and would they not have to leave the country anyway to pursue a profession after they've learned it?
Exactly right. Yes.
Paul, thank you.
There just are very few opportunities there. There is not a very developed economy. If you're in San Pedro, you can work in the sugar mills. If you get the money to buy a motor scooter, you can use it as a taxi service. You can work in the assembly free zone, which is terrible salaries. The resorts don't pay well. You know, it's fine to become a doctor, but you have to find patients who can afford to go to the doctor. There is a truth, and Dominicans really feel it and are concerned about it, that this is denying kids their education. But on the other hand, isn't it kind of a rich people perspective to say it's bad to offer $3 million to a starving kid?
Here's John from Boston. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course. Go ahead.
Yes. Here in Boston, my son Anthony, 2 years ago, graduated from East Boston High School as a high school baseball player. And he found himself in the opportunity to join a program that the Red Sox had going on within their developmental organization in the Dominican Republic called Lindo Sueños, which I believe roughly translates to a beautiful dream. Mm-hmm. He and a collection of other high school baseball players from across the state went to the Dominican Republic within the Red Sox training facility, and they had more or less a three-pronged ideal to what they were doing to address some of the questions about exploitation and academics of the Dominican players. Hmm. But what their program was all about is they would actually have school time in the morning, then they would spend time building and refurbishing fields within the various barrios that existed across the Dominican Republic, and then in the afternoon they'd play baseball with the players who had been accepted into the Red Sox training program.
Oh, that's a great program. I'm glad you called, John. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, too. It's something that I forgot to point out, actually, is that the academies do provide education. And either at the academies or, in some cases, they send the kids to school. And the experience of baseball is that the more grounded, the more educated the kid is when he gets to the U.S., the better the chances are that he'll do well.
Mark Kurlansky, in our final couple of minutes here, whose story of success or failure fascinated you the most writing this book?
Well, the success story that I found most compelling was Jose Cano, Robinson's father, who, you know, just kept getting released. He was a pitcher. He had a bad shoulder. He was in constant pain. And, you know, he did in the end make it to the major league for one season and become a major leaguer. It was huge, and it was a story of incredible determination, the son of a fisherman. And aside from that, the stories I found most moving were about the guys that didn't make it and you know, went back to San Pedro and found ways of building a life, and some of the people who, you know, like Fernando Tatis, when he signed and was sent to the U.S. to play in Texas, his father came to see him. His father was a player who was released in the U.S. and never went back. And he met his father for the first time when he went to play ball in the U.S. And these people, they really struggle, and they have a lot of heart, and they're pretty tough and inspiring people.
I've got 10 seconds. You wrote Cod, Salt, 20 other books. Now this one on baseball. What's next?
My next book is called Edible Stories. It's fiction. It's a cycle of interrelated stories about people and their relationships to various foods.
Ah, sounds good to me. Thank you very much for your time, Mark Kurlansky.
Thank you, Jane.
Mark Kurlansky, author of The Eastern Stars, How Baseball Changed the Dominican Town of San Pedro de Macorís. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.